This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to www.accessradiotaranaki.com.
It's time for real stories from those who make our region and our country their home. Time for making yourself at home, thanks to the support from the Ethnic Communities Development Fund.
Good morning, Taranaki. We are with Making Yourself at Home on Radio Taranaki 104.4 FM. Your voice, your choice. I am your co-host, Brian, from the United States. And back with me in the studio after a long time away is Clara from Spain. And we have a special guest, Anne-Marie.
Hi, everyone. Thank you, Brian. I'm so happy to be back. I have to say I'm a little bit jet lag. I just arrived yesterday, so settling in slowly. Very happy to be here and be in the radio again with Brian and with our special guest for today, Anne-Marie. So Anne-Marie is from the Netherlands, and she has been living in New Zealand for the past 25 years. She is a sole trader and has a clinic on her home property, and she's also a keen gardener. She loves growing her own food. That's really, really cool. And her journey has been colored by nature and healthcare, and both nourish and inspire her deeply. So welcome. We are looking forward to hear your story, Anne-Marie.
Thank you.
How are you today?
I am good. Thank you for having me.
One of the early questions we asked our guests is about their journey, how they found themselves to be living here in Taranaki. So if you can fill us in on how that journey went from the Netherlands and your time in Europe to ending up in this beautiful part of the world.
Yeah, so I can't believe I've been here for 25 years already. It's like
Time flies.
I'm not that old. So I studied nursing. I'm a registered nurse by trade. I studied nursing in Holland, decided that that wasn't what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. So then I studied naturopathy while I worked part-time. And then at the end of my naturopathy training, my nursing contract also came to an end. And so I ended up in this situation where I had nothing holding me in Holland. I had the opportunity to explore the world. And New Zealand has always pulled at my heartstrings. So I thought, okay, I'll give myself 3 months to figure out whether I want to live here in New Zealand or whether I'll come back home and then build a life in Holland. So I went, and the only reason why I came back was to fill a container with my stuff and ship everything over. And because of my nursing training, I was able to start working as a caregiver here in New Zealand. I had friends from an exchange year at the end of my secondary school. I had friends in Palmerston North and in New Plymouth, and both of them said, come over here and we'll settle you in. And so I picked New Plymouth purely for that reason, and I haven't left since.
Yeah, so you first like arrived here in New Plymouth for that 3 month test?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I ended up on a huge sheep and beef farm just north of Awakino in the middle of nowhere, and I absolutely loved it. It was just brilliant. Yeah. Yeah. So that was really good. And then I ended up finding work in New Plymouth, and it's kind of rolled from there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You said that New Zealand had already been on your radar. Do you remember how that came about?
No, that's kind of like the whole mystery of me getting here, really. According to my family, I decided I needed to live in New Zealand from the age of 5. And I don't even know whether I knew where it was. So it's a little bit strange. But I ended up doing an exchange at the end of my high school when I was 16. So I stayed with a host family in Auckland for 9 months. And because I'd already finished my high school, I could just freewheel and do whatever I wanted to do kind of thing. And I, at that stage, I really just lost my heart to New Zealand, but ended up coming back home to Holland to do all my training. Yeah.
Mm. Mm. Oh, so you already knew when you moved here, more or less, how things were in New Zealand.
Yeah.
You had that experience.
Yeah. I'd done a little bit of travel with my parents, who then came over, of course, when I was 16. And we got this huge, huge camper van, which I think was an old horse truck, you know, and it's 25 years ago, even longer than that. And I was a long time ago. And there was just no such thing as tourism here in New Zealand. So you got this old, crappy old truck, and they said it was clean, and it wasn't clean. Not European clean, you know. Okay, how that goes. And it was just a monster of a machine, but it got us through the country, and we went through the South Island, and we went to Milford Sound. We did all the highlights, and so that was, for me, really a good confirmation that this was a country where I could quite happily live. And I never looked at something else. I never looked at France. I never looked at Scandinavia.
Yeah, like closer to home.
Somehow I needed to be as far away as possible.
And we indeed are, really.
Yeah. Mm. So that's kind of how it came about. But I'm glad I did all my training in Holland. It's given me a really good foundation to make the whole migration process so much easier. The nursing really helped me get into New Zealand and become a resident. With no drama whatsoever, they were so happy to have me.
Mm. And welcome to the studio, Alina. Nice
thank
to see you this morning.
Thank you. Yeah, I didn't know exactly if I can come today, so I'm so happy to be here and also see you guys, and especially Clara. Huh?
Yeah,
welcome
so
back,
nice
Clara.
Nice to see you, Alina, again.
Yeah, nice to see you, and thank you, Anne, for taking the time to be our guest today.
Mm, thank you.
I'm glad the wind didn't blow anybody away.
Yeah, exactly right, yeah.
Anne-Marie, can you tell us about, if you can, remember the first kind of impressions you had and how you felt while you were settling into your new life here?
I can vividly remember when I came off the plane in Auckland and I was picked up by my host family. They showed me a little bit around in Auckland because I stayed there for the 9 months. And it was August, I think. And so they drove through a big domain of sorts, I suppose, and there was rugby games on, but it must have rained, you know, being Auckland, it must have rained for at least 2 months, and it was just mud, and it was pouring, and I mean, we don't have rugby in Holland, soccer and hockey and whatever else, but no rugby, so I was looking at it. What the heck? What's this about?
Yeah.
I was told you. So there was many, many culture shocks, really. And when you're 16, you just take it all in your stride. And then only years later, you're like, oh, this was indeed very, very different. But because you speak the language and because you know you can find your way around, those cultural differences don't come until a lot later. It's the surface level is fairly comfortable. Mm-hmm. But then underneath it's where a lot of the differences are. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can you point out any of those, cultural differences that have started to stand out that are kind of below the surface?
For me, I was raised, and in Holland, there's a couple that I could say, really. One of them is I was raised in a really mixed environment. Men and women were always together, and there was conversations between the men and women, like you were on a birthday party or a gathering of sorts. Everything just mingled, everyone just mingled. Whereas in the environment that I came into in Auckland and then here in New Plymouth as well, it was separate. Mm. If I wanted to talk to people, I always ended up in the women's group, and I was like, that's a little strange. I found that really odd that it was so separate.
Interesting. Interesting.
And maybe it was because in New Plymouth I ended up in a farming community. Maybe that was why.
Okay.
But I found that very strange that was so segregated. And so I ended up having conversations with the women about things that were interesting. But I was also very interested in farming and horticulture and the lifestyle on the land, and so I was missing that part. Yeah, so that was an interesting one.
Do you notice that also these days, like nowadays, or is something that has changed?
For me, I think it has changed, but that's maybe because I found new friends and different people to work with. Yeah, so I don't struggle with that anymore.
Yeah, perhaps you have find a way of
being
to like both environments at the same time.
Yeah, it was interesting. It's like, oh, okay, just women. Right, let's just, fine.
And I think also like for me in Romania it's the same. You know, we are more like women and men separate. Like, but I think it's coming naturally, so I didn't even realize that. And I think for me like here was natural that we are, in a way separate. I don't know why, but I saw also that in Germany there are more women and men talking together. Yeah. Doesn't matter. So maybe it's the Nordic culture. Maybe it's more.
I don't know. It was something that really struck me. I thought, oh, this is interesting. I better, you know, make sure I don't step on toes. And the other thing that I found really interesting is in New Zealand, the tolerance level is just many, many times higher than in Holland. I found anyway. In Holland, we've always got something to say about something.
Yes.
And we've always got 1 or 10 solutions for someone else's problem. And then basically what we say is, do it my way, because then it's, you know, you do it right. Whereas here in New Zealand, it's like, just give anything a go and try stuff out. And we're here to help if you want us to help. So you've got so much more freedom to explore and to stuff things up, you know, beautifully, because you can't really lose, and you're not being judged, and you're not being ridiculed, I suppose, and you don't feel like you're doing something wrong. It's like, just give it a go. And that's really refreshing, and I still find that really refreshing now, even though it's changing.
I have noticed that too. Like here it's more like there's plenty of ways of doing something, and there's not so much like this is the right way and this is not the right way. It's like, if you find a way, that will be the right way for you.
Exactly.
And you are the one to find that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The flip side of that is that you also are being left to struggle on your own.
Yeah.
So whereas in Holland, people will prevent you from even getting into the pool so you can't drown. Here in New Zealand, you get into the pool, you're near on drown, and then people are like, oh, maybe she might need some more help, you know?
Yeah.
So the contrast is really quite big.
Yeah. And I am keen about, like, you said you were growing your own food. Was that the case also when you were living in Holland, or how does your relationship with nature has shifted since you moved here?
I always wanted to be a farmer, you know, fireman, doctor. I wanted to be a farmer. And basically the family said, well, that's not going to happen in Holland, is it? Even though I come from a farming family, my father's cousins, most of them had and still have big farms in the north of Holland. But yeah, that was not for me, and I don't know why. But so the thing about being in nature and growing food and understanding the cycle of where does my food come from and what process do we have to go through to get the food on the table has always fascinated me in a bizarre kind of way, I suppose. So when I was able to purchase my own lifestyle block, when I settled here in New Zealand 25 years ago, I had to have the chickens, I had to have the sheep, I had to have the vegetable garden, I had to have the orchard, I had to have all the stuff. And so, of course, a bit of lots more than I could chew. But I have, over the years, really come to terms with the cycle of life, especially with my animals, because I would have my own animals killed and processed to eat. And I think I now appreciate my food in a much more conscious and in a better way than if I had just gone to the supermarket to pick up whatever I would pick up. I know how much effort and energy and connection goes into growing your food, whether it's on four legs or whether it's sitting in the ground.
Yeah.
To me, all of that is the same. And so you learn to really appreciate
what you have,
what you eat,
yes,
and what you drink, I suppose. Yeah,
it's quite a process, and I'm also planting now some tomatoes. I would like to make tomato soups and stuff like that. So yeah, it's a big process, and I think New Zealand is offering us so much good land here. So I I put some salad, so I have some rucola and everything now.
Nice.
But it was very easy to plant, you know. Yeah. And it's growing so fast.
Oh, New Plymouth is fabulous, really.
Yeah.
If you buy a plant for a shrub in the nursery, on the label it will say it will grow like 2 by 2 meters. You stick it in a garden and 3 years later it's like 6 by 6 meters and you're like, So everything just grows ridiculous here. It's a beautiful climate, especially where I'm at, just north of New Plymouth. I can grow so much stuff.
What is growing now? What's the season
for? Oh, all your brassicas, really, your silver beet, pumpkins, oyster pumpkins, spinach, what else have I got? Carrots.
Carrots.
I didn't manage to grow leek. I didn't want to grow from seed this year, so I've missed out on that, but they'll come next round.
But it's also very, you go to Bunnings, you buy a plant for $2, and then from that plant you have a lot of beans or capsicum or tomatoes, and that's it, I think I wouldn't have this in Europe,
even though over the years my parents of course have come to New Zealand several times to come and visit and stay, and somehow they have expanded their like little post stamp sized back garden into a vegetable patch and a couple of apple trees, and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's just the two of them. So once
amazing.
There's a glut, they'll be eating that thing for 2 weeks on end. So somehow it does tend to inspire other people when you've got your own food. And I was able for a couple of winters to share my food because I used to grow so much. I can't think small in this country either. Everything has to be big. Like when I build something, it has to be big. And so the vegetable garden has to be big. You plant like 100 broccoli.
If you have a lot of plants, also you will want to
just
use it if it's there.
Absolutely.
Or to sell it or to give it.
So you freeze it and you process it and you put it in jars and you give stuff away and then you eat what you can.
As much as you can. But also, the eggs, because I know you gave me, Anna was giving me eggs.
Yeah.
And she was like posting on Facebook, I have so many eggs. Who wants? And I said, okay, yeah, of course I want,
Yeah.
It's amazing, to have this possibility.
The problem with chickens is it's kind of like a slippery slope. You start with 3 and then 6 months later you have 12 and then a year later you've got 45. How did this happen?
How many do you have now?
We've got 7 and a rooster.
Okay.
We acquired a rooster because my son always wanted to. He's a poultry boy. He anything with wings and feathers, that's him to a T, and he's always been like that. And so we always had this agreement that if we have chickens, we have to have a rooster, a big one with a big tail. And we haven't had a rooster. The last one died of old age, and it's kind of peaceful. But then this beautiful silver frizzle rooster turned up. And his name is Miles, and he's young. And so we thought, I can't let Miles go. He's just gorgeous. So
amazing.
Miles has joined the flock,
amazing,
and he's just trying to settle in. And he's crowing from 4 o'clock in the morning.
I know that starting a food system and growing food is quite the learning journey with lots of experimentation. What are some of the highlights of things you've come to realize and learn along the way?
Oh, the highlights were for me that I can grow an awful lot of stuff that I would never even contemplate growing in Holland. So I've got a much wider variety, and I've been able to tap into a lot of the heritage seed stuff as well. So it's really lovely to experiment with the old produce to bring that back, because the supermarket is very limited in what they offer. One of the highlights was for me to grow a ridiculous amount of basil, which I then processed into pesto, which fed me throughout the winter. That was really cool. the flip side of all of this is that it takes an enormous amount of effort and time.
Yeah.
And when you start working again, once your baby's gone to school and you've got to earn an income and you have to start working again, then all of that produce work goes on the back burner. And that's when it gets ugly, because your nature keeps on growing no matter what. So
yeah.
My gardens have been fully overgrown for like 4, 5, 6 times. And then come winter, I just find it back and start with fresh enthusiasm in spring. But it's a ton of work and time and effort to do it right. I decided yesterday I wasn't going to grow tomatoes.
Yes,
because it always gets out of hand.
They grow too many, right? Like,
oh, and it's just like you can't just grow 3. Again, I have to think big. So I have to grow 30. And then I can't get back into this tomato contraption in time to prune what I need to prune, and it just becomes this jungle, and tomato jungle. And then when I finally then get the tomatoes, I can't even get to them. So I thought, am I going to put myself through this again this year? Am I just going to flag it? So I decided not to, but I might change my mind.
Maybe if you change your mind, you know, I can always come and take some.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about, because I know you are working also from your space, right?
Yeah.
How did you start this journey with the work that you do? And I don't know if you discussed already about
it. No. So at the moment, I have my clinic on the property.
Yeah.
My beautiful partner took on the challenge of turning my son's playhouse, which I built, which was way too big, into a closed-in sleep-out type thing for the purpose of one of the teenagers to move in, and both of them kindly declined. So I was like, right, that's cool. It'll be mine then, thanks very much. So I moved my clinic into there. I've grown up in a household where complementary health was normal. My mother was a muscle tester, an applied kinesiologist, and knew an enormous amount of nutrition. From basically when I was born, she was ahead of her time, really. And my father was a physiotherapist all his life. And from both sides of the family, complementary health and mainstream health were really strong components in our lives. So it's kind of when I was sick, you would go for homeopathy and herbal teas and rest and not anything else. So for me to move into the naturopathy was kind of like a given.
Yeah.
And so when I came to New Zealand, I obviously had to work as a caregiver and then as a registered nurse. But I've always wanted to have my clinic on the side, because that's where my heart is. That's what my passion is. So that's kind of always been the stable force as a part-time bit on the side.
It was always there.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, and so there is a naturopathic college, or there was a naturopathic college here in New Plymouth. It was a distance education school here in New Plymouth. And I was able to find work with them as a tutor. So I went from my nursing into tutoring, back into nursing. Then I had my baby, and then I went back into tutoring, because that worked really well while I was raising my son. I left the nursing behind. I've got no practicing certificate either, and I don't feel the need to come back into that world. And so eventually I gave up the work as the tutor and decided I just want to put all my time and effort into my business, because if you don't push the boat out, if you don't keep it safe, if you always keep it safe, and if it's always the sideline, you never really know what you can achieve with that. And because my clinic is my passion, it's what I love to do, I thought I've just got to push myself off the cliff and just give this a go. So Pretty scary. Yeah, yeah. But
so this is a naturopathy.
Yeah, naturopathy, applied kinesiology, and Bowen therapy now as well. Mm. So the Bowen therapy is the bodywork component. I used to always do massage, but it's hard work. It's heavy work.
It is.
And Bowen therapy is really light. I can do that until the day I die.
You're saying Bowen?
Bowen, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Can
yeah.
you explain a little bit more about what it is and what type of things Bowen therapy help with?
Yeah, so Bowen therapy was originally created by an Australian not so long ago, 1950s, I think. Not sure. Tom Bowen was his name. And he basically had this gift in his hands where he could help people get rid of pain or support them with injuries or internal imbalances. And he wasn't really sure what he was doing because he had no medical background whatsoever. But he did that work intuitively, and then he learned a lot from chiropractors and osteopaths and Chinese medicine people. So those are the flavors that you will find in this body work as well. But the way I try and explain it to people is it is like fascia release work. It is work on the connective tissue, and the connective tissue is literally what it says. It connects all our body parts. And it is the communicator between all our body parts. So if we can influence that in a positive way, we can influence everything else. Mm-hmm. And the work that I do with it in the clinic, it just leaves me gobsmacked so often that I'm like, I barely did anything. And look at the results. There's no pain, or the pain is significantly reduced. They can walk better. They're upright all of a sudden instead of bent over. Their periods are changing. The headaches are gone. It's just like the list goes on. I just love it. And that's what I say on my... in my marketing sometimes as well, this is as close to miracle work as I can get it. Mm. And you can hear, I just absolutely love it. I am so glad that I trained in this modality and let go of the massage, because for my body, it is much easier. And the results are so much better. Mm. And so that's a part that I really love to work with. Really in the work that I do, and it's with the muscle testing as well. For me, less is more. If you can create a really good quality stimulus, whether that is in healthcare, whether that is in your garden, whether that is with animal health, if you can find that one stimulus and you put that into their system will run with that. That's I think how we are innately wired. We know how we want to be. We know what it is to be healthy. We know what it feels like to be balanced. So if we're not in balance, we don't need to be pummeled into shape. We don't need tons of stuff. We just need the right stuff. And the things that I've got in the clinic, in the sense of the remedies, but also in the sense of Bowen, both work along those lines. We'll keep it simple, do as little as possible to get the best result.
Mm. And Bowen and kinesiology is the same thing, or is different?
No, they're different things. The applied kinesiology is what I call muscle testing. So basically, because we're hardwired to know what's safe and not safe, that's from the caveman era when we had to figure out whether we had to run or hide or whether it was okay to gather food, that hardwiring is still there in our limbic system. So we can tap into that by asking the body questions through a muscle test, because the body will tell us if it's okay or not okay, if it's safe or not safe, if it's balanced or not balanced. And if it's not safe or not balanced, then we can match that with a remedy, a homeopathic remedy, a flower essence, a herbal remedy, a supplement, a food.
Anything
that the body chooses.
Yes. Yeah. So, for example, what type of things can you ask through muscle testing?
Anything.
Anything.
So
common, or yes, for the listeners to have an idea.
So you can ask anything, really. You can ask a child whether he's got red socks or blue socks, and the body will know, yeah?
Okay.
So those are the fun things that you can do, and they're easy for people to understand, really. Like, okay, my body's responding. My body clearly knows know is the color socks that I'm wearing today. But I can also ask for energy levels, and I can ask for hormonal imbalance. I can ask for digestive issues. I can ask for what do we need to support migraines? Mm-hmm. So those are the things that I work with. And again, those are really the niches that I've moved into. I love working with busy mothers because I am one myself. So digestive issues, energy levels, overwhelm, emotional overwhelm, those kind of things. You can just work so easily with the muscle testing. You find the remedies that align with that, and you bring that whole system back in balance. You increase the energy, you increase the vitality. People sleep better, they function better. In the end, they're happier. Mm. And life's so much easier when you're happier.
Yeah, be happy and feel good in our bodies. Yes.
Absolutely.
It's
and
the
I think
ultimate goal for everyone, I guess.
Yeah. So those are the things I think if that's what it boils down to for me, is that if we're not balanced and if we're not happy, our vitality drops. Mm. And when our vitality drops, all sorts of other imbalances can kind of enter our system, and it kind of snowballs from there if we don't stop it.
Mm. Yeah. So when we say muscle testing, how does it work? So I am imagining like contracting or relaxing.
Yeah.
Is that the case?
Yeah. Basically, it's
so
it's
if
you
it
can
contracts it's a no. If it relaxes, a yes.
It's kind of the other way around. Oh, okay. It's for me anyway, but that's how I test. It's almost like, you know, when you're in fight flight, your body contracts. Everything has to be contracted. But when you're in terror mode, you will just go floppy. It's like almost like you're playing possum. So we're working with a strong muscle or a weak muscle. If I ask the body of something, and it's like, yeah, I'm okay with that, it's safe, it's fine, we're good, then I get a strong muscle. But if I ask the body something that stresses it out, because it's like there's no energy, or we've just asked something emotional, or we've tapped into the hormones and the body knows that that's not good, I get a weak muscle. And when I get the weak muscle, I can then look for a remedy that will then make the muscle go strong.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Very interesting. And it's the opposite that I thought like intuitively, but it makes sense now that you have explained it.
Yeah, and the muscle that I use is the forearm. So
it's everything, where do you touch more?
I touch on the wrist.
On the wrist, so everything is by touching
so
the wrist.
So my client would lie on the massage table, and they would just have their upper arm would lie on the table, and they would have their lower arm upright, and I would just test by just gently pushing the wrist. Yeah.
Wow, and you can see so many things. I mean, feel so many things through the wrist.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. I love it. It's weird. It's hard to explain it to people, but when they're on the table and they feel the difference in muscle test and muscle strength when we do the starting work, they're like, oh, okay. And then when we find the remedies, every remedy has a description. It's all good and well to work with the body only, but the head still needs to follow the process, because the head still wants to be in control. When I have the description of the remedy, I read out the description of the remedy, and very often it is just spot on to what's going on in these people's lives, to the emotional issues they're struggling with, the challenges they are having. It's really good. So we connect the body and the mind by figuring out what is the description of this remedy that your body decided it needed. Yeah.
Wow. Mm. So you have to be very present, I imagine, and very intuitive to do this work, right?
Yeah, to a point I have to turn my head off, because my head's, you know, it's my client's body that's doing the talking. And this is why I love this part of the work, because I can, with my textbooks and my knowledge and my wisdom and all the stuff that I've learned, I can cook up a beautiful assumption of what I think is needed. But my client's body doesn't lie. My client's body says, this is exactly what I need. I don't need that supplement. Mm-hmm. I only need that one, and I only need half the amount of what I'm currently taking. That kind of stuff. So if I put my head away for the time being and purely work with what their body is telling me, then we've got a fairly clean channel to to really work on their specific personal need. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, I can create a plan with the basics, with the foods and the fluids and the lifestyle and the screen time and exercise and breathing and all the stuff. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. And is this something you can use on yourself?
Like yeah.
To self-heal, like for example, Reiki?
Yeah, you can. You can. I will semi-regularly be in the clinic and create a remedy for myself because I'm not perfect. I'm going through stages in my life as well. So there's always going to be curveballs and challenges. And there's always going to be stuff that you think, oh, what can I use from nature that will support me in this process, in this journey? Because I always come back to nature. Because nature provides us with everything, and it provides us with at least 10 solutions to everything. Mm. So it's just figuring out which one suits me best at the time. Mm. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
That was really wonderful to hear about and super interesting. And yeah, I'm a very, very into health and wellness and longevity. So it's fascinating to hear about. Sounds like very cool work.
Yeah, I love it. I really do. And the bizarre thing really is that I've been doing this for 25 years and there's not a lot of people that know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably because I'm hesitant to speak out about it. The culture is changing now. If I would be speaking about Bowen therapy and muscle testing 15 years ago, that would not be very well received usually, not in public. People don't understand it very well. But the times have really changed, especially since the COVID era, times have really changed. And so it's much easier for me now to put that information out there and for people to either just leave it and think, it's not for me, whatever, or for people to think, oh, I need to actually catch up with her and ask what this can do for me. So it becomes much easier to talk about.
Mm.
Yeah.
I've noticed that, and I think it's a good evolution in terms of like you listen, and if it doesn't resonate, you just like move away and keep looking for something else. But then if it resonates, why not trying?
Exactly. Exactly.
Instead of saying like, yeah, but what's the science? And yeah, I am all about science, but I also like to just like resonate with what feels good for me and feel it in the body. And then perhaps there's not science yet. But if it works for you, it's easy to feel it in the body.
Ah, totally. And the problem I have with science and whatever I can find online is that science contradicts itself in so many ways. Even if we work with a simple herb, if I would research one simple herb with the science for the past 10 years, I would end up with so much stuff that is contradicting that I'm like, now what do I do? And especially when we're working with female hormones, there's just so much information out there that doesn't add up, that doesn't make sense, that makes it even more confusing. It really just depends on what journal article you read and exactly what they've been looking for and how much detail they went into. And this is what I love the muscle testing, because it's not me talking, it's not my books talking, it's the body talking. And if there's a hormonal imbalance in their body, it could be anywhere. It doesn't have to be necessarily estrogen. It can be something to do with thyroid. Mm. And the textbooks don't go there. So I love science. I love reading science, but I also hate it because it just makes it so much more complicated. It's not straightforward.
Navigating through the world of just the world in general, and it takes a high degree of scientific literacy to understand the limitations of science and really what the point of science is. Understanding how to work with the results and conclusions of the science.
Yeah, exactly. And to be able to relay that then back to your specific client with their specific issue, that becomes really, really time-consuming and difficult.
Yeah.
And again, this is where the muscle testing and the groundwork, just the basic health groundwork on diet, lifestyle, exercise, that at least that will get them going. That will increase their vitality. And Yeah, that it creates the their trust back in their own bodies, and it gives them the energy in the tank to be able to get through the days.
From my perspective, is with the traditional health system, we're working with public health data, and everybody's part of the average. While in it, I would imagine in the complementary health styles, it's really each individual is an individual. It's N equals one. There's very specific approaches, very specific remedies for each individual and their unique circumstances. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, that's how I work. Mm-hmm. So I work really specific to the person, and within that, I work holistically to that person. I don't narrow things down. And the older I get, the more I can see how many layers there are to the holistic approach. It just doesn't stop. But this is also the reason why I don't really like the word holistic anymore, because everybody uses it. And it becomes one of those hollowed out phrases where, it just becomes one of those trend words.
Yeah.
But I'm finding a lot of people coming out of the medical system because they are being put into this one size fits all approach. And in the old days, that seemed to work. But nowadays, I think the demand is different. People don't want to fit that one size fits all, or they don't want to have the medical chemical solutions to their problems, or they don't want to be on medication for the rest of their lives. So they are actively searching for alternatives.
And I can see also, like, working in mental health, I have lots of clients who are trying a lot of medicine, for depression or anxiety or other, mental health issues. And they told me they are doing a lot of kinesiology, other therapies, and it works much better than to take these pills, for sleeping or for eating or for, and I totally agree with what you say.
It's a tough one. It really is.
It is.
I think what I love is that the people are asking for something that fits them better. Because, especially with mental health medications, but also with contraception, for example, it's a chemical cocktail that goes in, and we don't really know in the long run what exactly it's doing and if it's actually fixing the problem. So I absolutely love it when people say, okay, I'm on this medication, but I still want to be able to work on something else. And we can do that with complementary work. It doesn't bite each other. If I work with a client who's on medications for mental health or is on hormone replacement therapy or whatever medications they're on, I can still safely work alongside that and increase the vitality and improve their general well-being. And then they can go back to their doctor and say, okay, I've been doing this, I feel better. Can we
reduce? Right. Yeah.
Can we do something else? Whatever. And so the way I work and the remedies that I choose do not interfere with the medical system. And that's what I really enjoy, because there's good stuff for both. If we need medications, by all means, have medications. There's obviously a big place for that. But there's also choice, and I think the sense of choice is much stronger now than it used to be in the past.
Well,
amazing.
Time is flying here, and we are nearing the end of our hour. I feel like we should loop this back into kind of one of our common themes about how do we, as migrants, settle into a new place and make yourself at home and in a new area. So, looking back, what did you learn about finding your people, and really what elements of settling in did you find most useful in really making Taranaki your new home?
I think what I said at the beginning really is the tolerance level of people and the sense of space I've been able to have to be able to build the life that I wanted for me specifically. There was no limitations and there was always support and there was always people out there able and willing to teach me on how to shear a sheep and how to, I don't know, process a chicken, and how to grow my food. You know, the suggestions and the advice and the support is always being freely given, and that's really really nice. It's enabled me to, settle in and evolve in a really safe and comfortable way.
So when you were starting from scratch and really getting things going, were you going out and talking to people for advice and trying to get help to figure out how to
do
a chicken?
Really.
Or were just people showing up at your door?
Neighbors, really, and people in my area who had lifestyle blocks as well. I actually can't remember. I don't think I went to a lot of courses or anything like that. It was just, was a social interaction with other people. And then just putting to work what you learn and either succeeding or messing it up and trying it again. But just no pressure to having to create something fabulous. It's just to give it a go and to learn and to give it another go and to learn more. For me, that process has been invaluable, and I think here in New Zealand I've really had the chance to do that in a very comfortable way, whereas in Holland, I don't think I would have even started it.
It's quite different, right? Holland and New Zealand, and I can see that we had more guests from Holland, and they share similar thoughts.
Yeah, we're a funny old crowd, aren't we?
Yeah. And like, if there is a new person in New Plymouth or New Zealand, what would you recommend them in order to feel themselves like home? What would you tell them? How should they start?
Oh, it depends on the person. It really depends on the person. Find your people. Find your people. Immerse yourself. Go and do a sport. Find music. Find groups of people in the community. And then settle with what resonates with you. I think that's the most important part, because I'm out on the lifestyle block. It can be very, very lonely. So it's really important to get those people around.
Yeah.
But also to then be able to say, this is what I'm used to in my country. This is what I'm noticing here in New Zealand. How can I marry that up? And you really do need people to help you with that.
And as you said, I think there is also a farmers group for migrants that Gita is offering different workshops.
Oh, brilliant.
So, we can maybe also promote that for our listeners.
Promote that on the website.
Yeah, so now that we were talking, I was just thinking about that, because she's especially looking on migrants who have farms and offering support. Is called the ruler support or something like that.
Oh, brilliant.
Amazing.
Cool.
And if someone wants to find you so that perhaps they can try your health offerings, how do they do that? Do you have a website or?
Yeah, I've got a website and a Facebook page. My clinic is Holistic Health Taranaki. So the website is, if you Google it, you'll find it, holistichealthtaranaki.com, and the Facebook page is called Holistic Health Taranaki. So you can find me there, connect with me, have a chat, see what we can do.
Yeah, amazing.
Cool. And we'll have those links posted on the post episode, or Facebook post.
Oh, brilliant.
For the Making Yourself at Home Facebook page. So you'll be able to find those links there along with the recording of the show.
Amazing, yeah.
Anything else you'd like to share with us, Anne-Marie?
No, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's absolutely our pleasure. It's been a really, really great time speaking with you.
Thank you.
Yes, that's amazing. And thank you for taking the time to be here, and looking forward to more stories about your therapies, and also, whenever you have more veggies or eggs to share, you know where you can find us.
I will drop them off here.
We are here, yes. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. And have a nice day. See you next Monday, same time, same place.
Yep. Signing off from Radio Taranaki 104.4 FM. Your voice, your choice. This has been Making Yourself at Home with Brian, Alina, and Clara. And stay warm out there. Brighter days ahead. Spring is coming, folks.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Take care, Taranaki. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode. For more information and others just like this, head along to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.